So in our practice of meditation, breath meditation is our primary practice, as it was for the Buddha. We're developing the qualities of concentration, qualities of jhana qualities. Jhana is a kind of concentration. It's the kind of concentration that the Buddha taught. So jhana includes focus, what we sometimes call singleness of mind, samadhi, could be the Pali word, but it's not just focus, it's a quality of ease, and a quality of pleasure, sukha, so a quality of ease, piti, and a quality of pleasure, sukha. The Buddha's descriptions of the concentration that comes from breath meditation invariably includes those terms, piti and sukha, ease and pleasure. Such an important element of our Dhamma practice to develop this quality. It's really to cultivate this quality of ease. It's important to understand, you know, when we use this word cultivate, you know, that's what we mean. Ease is a quality that's part of our goodness, but it has to be cultivated. It's like we cultivate the plants in a garden. We cultivate this quality of ease. And the cultivation of this ease is so integral to our practice. It's an expression of love for ourselves, that we cultivate this quality. Thusly, in metta practice, one of the ways to understand metta, the expression of our metta for ourselves and all beings, we sometimes use the phrase, may I look after myself with ease. On our retreat, we chanted the Sublime Attitudes every morning. And one of the phrases is, may I look after myself with ease. The retreat, and over the past number of years, I think throughout the time that I've taught the Dhamma, I've always, but I think my understanding of this has developed as my own practice has developed over time, this quality of ease, this quality that we're trying to develop in practicing meditation and as Dharma students, is integral to the process of coming into tune. Buddha used this term a lot, being in tune, being in rhythm. It's a quality of rhythm. So the concentration, perhaps more than anything else, has a quality of rhythm to it, In the retreat, I talked a little bit about, and in my book, Skillful Pleasure, I talked a little bit about the neuroscientist Antonio Damasio, whose book, The Strange Order of Things, I really recommend. And actually, I meant to put a link to it in the notes. It's pretty easy to find, but if anybody needs a link, just let me know. And Damasio talks about the state of homeostasis, which is the state at which we're able to survive, the human organism is able to survive. But when we've achieved homeostasis, then we're able to function at our highest level. So the organism, out of this deep wish within it toward not just survival but thriving and true happiness, inclines to ease. Damasio talks very eloquently about how prehistoric man invented fire, right? So that he could find a more easeful abiding. an abiding that was more conducive to survival and to thriving and to evolving. The movement towards thriving and evolution is consonant with the movement towards a greater ease, because when there's a greater ease in our lives, we're able to function at our highest level. I like to call this the most favorable state. So in breath meditation, we're developing this quality of ease. When this quality is developed, we're more able to stay in the present moment. It makes sense, right? If the body is tight and tense, the present moment is not, the body is not going to be a place where we're going to want to stay. The present moment isn't a place where we're going to want to be, and it's certainly not going to be a place where we're going to be able to be most effective. So this quality of ease that we seek to develop in the breath meditation is the state that's most conducive to staying present, and the state that's most conducive, as the Buddha discovered, to awakening. Lastly, it's the most favorable state. So this is the Buddha's instructions. He laid it out in his first sermon, setting the wheel of the Dhamma in motion. The middle path that he described is a path of developing an easeful and pleasurable abiding so that we can awaken. He realized when he was a prince with all the external sense pleasures, that wasn't a state in which he could know a greater happiness. And then as an ascetic, depriving himself of an easeful and pleasurable abiding, even though his meditation in many ways, his focus, his samadhi was pretty strong, he wasn't really able to move beyond the level of wisdom, the heartfulness that he sought. He wasn't able to find that. And then he discovered that when he was able to develop through the practices of breath meditation this easeful and pleasurable abiding, this was the state at which he could awaken. So man invented the wheel. Man and woman invented the wheel because it was a more easeful way of living. Not having to carry things and trudge things, trudge and trudge. You know, the wheel made life a lot more easy for man, and man, using sort of the generic man, was in a position in which it was more conducive to thriving and evolving. So our wisdom, you know, this wisdom that we all have inside, you know, that's part of us, part of this organism, this wisdom that we all have inside, inclines us to is what's most easeful, because in that state we thrive. So this inclination towards what's most easeful is an expression of our wisdom and a function of love. May I look after myself with ease. May I look after myself with ease is an expression of love, because that ease is a state in which we're able to fulfill our wish to be happy and make the most of our lives. So in the breath meditation practice, in this step two, or as I like to refer to it, step 2A, some people came in on the retreat and were talking about step 2A and 2B, and I love to hear that. So in this step 2A, I actually put the very simple synopsis of the breath meditation instructions in the notes. This step 2A, once we establish mindfulness of the breath in the first step, in step 2A, we seek to discern what the breath is like. We seek to discern dis-ease in the breath and ease. There's dis-ease in the breath, there's ease. And then in 2B, we choose the ease. We choose the ease, and we cultivate the ease in the breath. We cultivate the most favorable state, the state in which we can be most connected to our innate wisdom and the heart, the citta. So we choose the ease in the meditation out of love for ourselves and all beings. So in cultivating an easeful breath, and again, cultivating, we have this quality of ease that is elemental to our goodness, just like those men and women who invented the wheel and fire had. So in cultivating this easeful breath, we come into tune with the heart. We come into tune with the heart. We cultivate the easeful breath so that we can come into tune with the heart. When we talk about the heart, we're talking about the citta, this place right here, up here in the upper part of the middle of the upper part of the body, as the Thais say, the knowing quality, what Ajahn Chah called the one who knows, our innate wisdom, and those qualities, those sublime qualities of love and compassion and joy and equanimity. So in cultivating the easeful breath, we come into tune with the heart, we come into rhythm with life, we come into rhythm with Dhamma, the truth of the way things are, that which transcends all conditioned things. Our path is a spiritual path in which we seek to know that which transcends conditioned things. So in cultivating the easeful breath, we come into rhythm with life, with Dhamma. So in cultivating the body, developing the body in step three, we cultivate this quality of breath energy, of ease in the body, the quality of sukha, pleasure, stillness. And as we cultivate this ease throughout the body, this breath energy in the body, we come more and more into tune, more and more into tune. So you cultivate the ease at the breath. I mean, that's just one part of the body. One of the reasons why we cultivate the ease at the breath is the breath conditions the body. The breath regulates the central nervous system. So, we're starting to come into tune when we feel the breath, but the breath also conditions this ease in the body because the body still has dis-ease in it, right? We choose one place that feels good, but we want to have the whole body as much as possible be filled with this quality of ease and to develop this quality of ease and flow throughout the body so that we come more in tune, more in tune, more in tune. So we learn through this process to find that just the right amount of ease, just the right amount of ease to be in tune. The ease has to be flowing through the body, but if it's too strong, it's jaggedy, and there's a quality of dissonance there. So we try to develop what the Thai Ajahn's called just right concentration, just right. It's like the metaphor I use, perhaps archaic, on the retreat. It's like tuning a radio right into that right. In the old days you had a radio, and if you turned it a little bit too much, it was static, and you just kept turning to, I hit that station. Not enough ease, too much. And if you just get it right, there it is. Sometimes when I was a kid, I had a my parents' hi-fi. Anybody have a hi-fi? And I was like on suburban Long Island. Can I get a radio station in like Cleveland? At night sometimes you could get, I got Cleveland. So we're learning to come into tune. We tune the energy. We bring the body into tune. The more the body is in tune, the more we're able to stay in the body. Feels good. The mind inclines to what feels good. It does that out of wisdom, because in that state in which we feel good, we're able to thrive. So the mind inclines towards that which feels good. when the body feels good, when there's this quality of ease, we're more able to stay in the body and we're closer to the heart. The more we're in the body, the closer we are to the heart. And the more we know the rhythm of the heart, not the beating heart, but this quality of wisdom and love. We know the rhythm, we're in tune with the rhythm of our goodness. You know, the ease itself and the sukha is a function of our goodness. We're in tune with the rhythm of the Dhamma, that which transcends all the conditioned things, that which transcends time. Talked at the end of our retreat about how, a little bit about how our goodness is passed on. You know, the rhythm of the goodness that was developed and cultivated by the beings who were there, that felt quality, you know, lives on within each of those beings who are there, you know, and it's always there, you know, that quality, that felt quality, that rhythm, you know, something that, you know, if we are really still and silent, we can know. The rhythm of each of these beings who've been coming, all the beings that have come to this group, you know, the goodness in showing up here and meditating with each other and supporting each other through life and the difficulty in life. You know, our goodness is what's passed on, and we carry that within us. That rhythm and vibration of each one of us becomes part of who we are, and we know that. Art, we like to sometimes talk about art, if it's visual art or music or poetry or writing, as something that in its purest form is an expression of that rhythm and comes out of that rhythm, that goodness, the rhythm of the Dhamma, the rhythm of things, the in-tunedness. So art in its purest form is a form of rhythm that's aligned with something greater than things that come and go. It's transcendent. And James Joyce said, you know, literature that's true, that's pure, art is a form of rhythm, it's all about rhythm. The abstract painter and teacher, Hans Hofmann, he taught many of the, was influential in teaching many of the abstract expressionists, the artists in the 20th century in New York City and other places, most known as being a great teacher. He said the highest quality in a painting is always the rhythm. The highest quality in a painting is always the rhythm. So art is a form of seeking a rhythm, an alignment with spiritual truth, something that's transcendent. As such, as a form of rhythm, it's something that's meant to be felt. It's meant to be felt. Meditation is something that's meant to be felt. It's a felt experience. It's a felt experience. It's meant to be felt, not thought about. I mean, it starts with being thought about. We use thought to move ourselves to the felt experience. So meditation is something that's meant to be felt. Life is something that is meant to be felt. It's a felt experience. It's a felt experience. It's like this moment right now. You know, we can think about this moment. What's it like just to know this moment? This moment is like this. It feels like this. So, in our retreat, I really try to emphasize the walking meditation, and you know, in our style of walking, the Thai style of walking, the Thai forest style of walking, it's very natural. We just try to find rhythm in our walking, and we're talking about the back and forth walking, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth walking, where we're finding a rhythm, we're feeling the breath, we're feeling the body. It's a process of getting in tune, finding the right pace, finding and connecting to that inner rhythm. Many of us, myself included, learned in the style of walking where you feel the feet and it's very slow, lifting, moving, placing, style of walking. And some of the yogis were talking about how, you know, in the past doing that style of walking on retreat in particular, they were able to really develop a strong focus. A really strong focus and just feeling the feet against the ground. But the Buddha's concentration is more than just focus of mind. It's more than just focus of mind. It includes ease, internal pleasure, and being in tune, and being in tune. So one of the things, and I talked about this, you know, in some of those styles where you know, you're just focusing on, you know, the sensation of the feet or the lifting of the feet, you might get into a really strong concentration in terms of focus, samadhi, you know, but we're not aware of the body and the heart, and it sort of like becomes like this zombie meditation. You know, the Thai Ajahns would go to some of the retreat centers, you know, in the U.S. and just be appalled, you know, the people walking like zombies across the lawns of the great retreat centers of the U.S. Yeah, so our practice is one of being in tune, having ease of being. And the walking meditation is really a powerful practice, and I really encourage people to do a little bit of walking meditation. It's a training in directing ourselves to the present moment, in the posture in which we're moving and the eyes are open, a posture that's more akin to the postures we're going to be in during the course of our lives. So in our walking meditation, we bring the attention to the breath and the body, and we try to find that internal ease. It's really, to me, the walking meditation more than anything. It's about being present. But it's like what I want to try to do in the morning when I do my 10 minutes of walking or so. It's like I'm tuning the body. I'm tuning myself with the heart. I'm tuning myself with the heart, you know, so that I'm tuning myself for the day. I'm tuning myself for the day. It's like, if you're gonna play a guitar, you know, the first thing you gotta do is get it in tune. You know, nobody wants to hear a guitar. Oh, come on over, I'm gonna play some tunes, you know, and it's like, you don't tune the guitar, you know. In preparing ourselves for the concert of life, we want to be in tune, you know, before we get out there on the stage of our lives. We want to be in tune. So the walking meditation is a beautiful way of getting ourselves in tune, in tune. The retreat was just a profound experience, I think, for all of us, as it always is. So many yogis there who've been meditating for a long time and have really learned to come into tune, and just that quality of ease was just so apparent to me as the teacher, the stillness and just being in tune in the sitting, you know. And sometimes some people said after the retreat, it was never so silent and so still in the meditation hall. You know, my sense of what that was about was that it was beings in tune. You know, there's sort of that external silence, but there's that internal silence, and I think that's what people were picking up on more than anything else. You know, being with a group of beings who were coming into tune and coming closer to the heart. You know, if a number of years ago, we decided, you know, we had some meetings about this, and to be honest, I mean, it was to some extent good extent a function of trying to find more affordable ways to have retreats. But we decided that, you know, we would do our own cooking on our retreats, and you know, we would have a cook, and we've been fortunate enough to have a cook on our retreats who is also a meditator and is part of the group, and sometimes actually has come to this group class over the years. But we decided that, you know, we would do our own cooking, we would have our own cook, and that we would work. We would work in the kitchen, and the yogis on the retreat, many of them would work on the kitchen. In this retreat, all the yogis worked in the kitchen, either in preparing the food or in cleaning up. You know, part of the idea was that this would be part of our practice, and that we would learn in being with each other, and, you know, where there was a little bit of speaking, hopefully not too much, but a little bit of speaking, but working together, we would be engaging in a training in which we're coming into tune, right? Coming into tune with others, coming into tune in our activities of life. Working together in tune with life and its goodness. And, you know, I'm so glad we did that. I'm so glad we did that, because it just, I think it's just such a powerful practice, such a powerful practice of working together like that. Now, that's what you sort of see in a monastery. It's different than like going to a retreat center where other people are doing the cooking and all the kind of the work there. You know, here we're all kind of being with each other and learning to be in tune with each other and work together and, you know, tune ourselves in accord with each other. What do they say in Zen? You know, chop wood, carry water. In what we do and how we live, we seek to be in tune, in rhythm. In tune with the heart, in tune with the Dhamma, in rhythm with life. You know, this rhythm of life has always been there and is always there. It's timeless. This rhythm of life is deathless. This rhythm of life conduces to a happiness that doesn't die. This is the happiness of the heart. So in any moment of life, when we come into tune, we know this happiness. So let's just close our eyes just for a second.